Good afternoon. You're listening to KABF 88.3 FM, the voice of the people. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host on today's Speak Up Arkansas show. We're going to be talking about workforce development, and less than 40 years ago, nearly 75% of the jobs in the United States could be filled by workers with no more than a high school diploma. Manufacturing, farming, construction jobs, among many others, typically required no formal education beyond the 12th grade. However, as technology has advanced and critical problem-solving skills have become inextricably linked with most occupations, so too has the level of education required for most jobs that were once classified as unskilled. A report from the Georgetown University Center on Education and Workforce noted the old middle wage jobs that paved an entire generation's way to the middle class, jobs like manufacturing, transportation, construction, and mining, are largely gone. But middle jobs remain almost one-third of the job openings across the United States. This same report also notes that by 2022, the United States will lack 11 million workers with post-secondary degrees, certificates, or credentials necessary to meet the job demand. That number includes 6.8 million employees with a bachelor's degree and 4.3 million workers with an associate's degree, vocational certificate, or some college experience. In a state like Arkansas that has one of the lowest percent of adults over 25 with a college degree, and where the median household income is just over $43,000, and with 97 low-income working families with children, that's 26% of the working families, workforce development is a critical component of our economic future. As with most effective attempts to meet the common good of our people, solutions involve working with partnerships that provide a network of employment, training, and related services that assist individuals to overcome barriers to becoming and staying employed and serve many vulnerable populations that should be incorporated into job-driven training programs. We'll be discussing the role of business, government, nonprofits, and local communities to develop a workforce that can assure the economic sustainability of Arkansas. We have in the studio today some folks who think about and do something about workforce development in Arkansas every day. I want to introduce them to you right now. Randy Zook, who is, you've got the longest title here in the room, I think, President and Chief Executive Officer of the State, Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and the Associated Industries of Arkansas. Sounds like a lot of responsibilities, and I know it's an organization that has a lot of impact in Arkansas. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure, Paul. And, you know, usually there's an inverse relationship between the length of the title and the real power that somebody has. So.
Yes, I've got many new changes in title and no income increase, so I know what that's like. And then we have traveled the furthest and actually got here on time, despite some traffic issues, is Roger Rich, who is the superintendent of Southside Schools. And Roger, we're looking forward to talking to you and your project future that you do in the Southside Schools. Thank you for being here.
Appreciate you. Glad to be here and glad to have you.
And W. Day Monocle, who is the executive director of the Little Rock Workforce Development Board. And I know W.J. for many years. I think we walked the streets of neighborhoods for political candidates together a couple of multiple times. And And I guess the last time I saw you was some concert out in the Prairie County, but I'm glad to see you here with me today.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here, and especially among your great panel of guests.
Thank you. And finally, but not least of which, is Cindy Varner, who is the Vice President of Workforce Development at Goodwill, Arkansas. And that's an organization I know that does great work in helping folks with workforce development. Cindy, thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Well, I think we'll start with letting Randy Zook give us sort of a look at workforce. I know he discusses this, as he said, just about every day. And we'll let you kind of help us put this whole discussion into perspective. Randy, what do you want the audience to know?
Why don't we start with the fact that there are lots of cross currents in the workforce or in the workplace today. There are lots of changes. Obviously, many of them are technology driven. Those are dramatic. Robotics becoming more and more widespread. Other technological innovations that are impacting lots of companies, from trucking companies to manufacturers to hospitals to retailers to everybody, really. So that's one element. That's technology. The other, and it drives expectations or requirements for employees, the skills they've got to have, the understanding of the machinery or the equipment or the systems or whatever it happens to be. The other big, I guess, structural issue in the workforce is the fact that we're aging and more people every day are retiring. The biggest challenge we have in Arkansas in terms of our workforce today is we don't have enough people. We have jobs that are going begging because the right people with the right skills are not in the right places way too often. If you look at the numbers nationally, and this is not peculiar or unique to Arkansas, this is true nationally. There are about 6 million open jobs across the U.S. economy right now. And there are only about 5.4 million people who are in the workforce and looking for employment. So there's a disconnect. Give you an example. There's a manufacturing company just east of here, not far. I won't name them for obvious reasons, but they would hire 150 people tomorrow morning if they could find the people with the skills, the attitude, the willingness to show up, willingness to learn the work and do the work. They'd hire 150 people tomorrow. I promise you, across the state, there are at least 20,000 open jobs driven by that kind of dislocation. There's another major poultry processing operation up in North Arkansas screaming for a couple hundred people right now. Can't find them. Not available. So we've got these pinch points across the economy. Lots of it's skills-driven. Lots of it is just location. It's a function of location. Not enough people in the right places. So we've got to deal with these things. Businesses are having to deal with it. These are challenges that are not unique to any sector. It runs all the way across everything from transportation. You mentioned trucking, for instance. There are major companies running radio ads today in Arkansas offering first-year income for truck drivers, $82,000 a year, plus benefits, plus retirement plan, everything, full package of benefits. That's the degree to which we're dealing with shortages, literally. Northwest Arkansas, if you can fog a mirror, somebody will pay you at least $15 an hour to stand there and do that because they're just out of people. They're down to less than 2% unemployment in Washington and Benton counties. And the area is booming. I mean, you can just drive up and down I-49 from Farmington to Bella Vista, and there's just opportunity all over the place. Part of our problem is that many people in Arkansas tend to be place-bound. And by that, I mean they're unwilling to move. They're unwilling to relocate. They're unwilling to go to work. There may not be this much demand where a person, an individual, is living today. But there's plenty of work, there are plenty of jobs, there are plenty of opportunities in Arkansas in this economy. It's pretty healthy. There's strong demand for people nearly without exception across the skill range. But especially in high demand, high wage jobs like computer programmers, technicians in hospitals of all kinds, CNC machine operators, long distance truck drivers, welders, diesel technicians, machinists, tool and die people, plumbers, all kinds of construction skills or trades. You got to get prepared to do those jobs, though. You've got to have the skills. You can't just, as you said earlier, Paul, in your opening comments about the requirements for preparation for work, you've got to be ready to do the jobs that are available. You can't just show up and expect to, you know, earn a living wage. Now, you can show up and get a job. There's no question about that. But the days of employers being able to hire at minimum wage are basically gone in most places in Arkansas. You just can't hire somebody for what still is a, you know, a fairly competitive minimum wage relative to other states. So that's the, in a way it's bad news, in a way it's great news. There's plenty of opportunity for young people coming into the workplace or workforce. Preparation is the key to it. Get the skills that are, that will be, you know, in demand long term, but they don't require college, 4-year college degrees. Most of these jobs can be qualified for with a year or 2 years worth of post-secondary, post-high school training or education in a 2-year community college or a 4-year program or a private institution like a technical institute. So there are a lot of ways to get into the workplace. There are a lot of roads to success in the U.S. economy. A lot of ways for kids to take advantage of those opportunities.
Okay. Well, we'll get back to you on a few things. We certainly need to talk a little bit about why that's the case here and what can be done about it. And I want to remind listeners that you can call in at 501-433-0088 and be a part of this discussion. Again, you're welcome to also, if you'd like, to send us an email if you're shy people that don't want to talk on the radio. You can email us here in the station at speakupar@gmail.com, and we will pass on any comments or any questions you might have. So join the conversation. This is an important issue, and we'd like to have you be a part of it. So well, Roger, let's go to you. I guess we need to start at education, and as one of the major helps in workforce development. And I know you all have quite a successful program going on at Southside Schools. I'd like for you to share with the audience that.
We'd love to. It's something we love to talk about. We're very fortunate. We call it Project Future Story, and it started several years back for our students. We just we have them write and tell what they want to do when they grow up or what occupation they'd like to have. And then we've tried to just match them up with that, and that's how this all got started. It started with our high school, and now we've worked it all the way down to our preschool. They change this occupation or what they want to do probably 20, 30 times, and that's okay. But we try to expose them to as many things as possible. So with this, we started looking at what could we do differently. You know, we serve about 3 out of every 5 of our families are economically disadvantaged, and our job, we felt like, was to remove every barrier that we possibly could for those families and those students. So we started doing some different things. We have a high-quality preschool. Our philosophy now is we do pre-K through career is what we do with our kids, and we've started with infants now all the way up until we're working with our students all the way up until you know, they get a job.
Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, howdy. I just overheard on the radio, I think it's on 88.3.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know I was on the phone.
Pardon?
I didn't realize I was on the phone. Let me put the phone down. Yeah, I put the radio down.
Yes. Did you have a comment or a question?
Sure. I'm a physician who relocated from Oklahoma to Arkansas for what I thought was some kind of a so-called work, a job as a professional. But it turned out to be a farce. We have a new designation to work now. It's no longer part-time or full-time or permanent, and locum tenens, they have a thing called a 1,000-hour extra help designation, whereby you get no benefits. You work 9 to 5. You have no weekends, but you have phone calls. In other words, it's sort of like almost like a labor law violation. And I'm just kind of curious, since leaving that position, I've had a very difficult time getting any kind of work. And as a professional, I find that to be rather strange. Do you have any explanation for that?
Anybody have a comment to make? I know that the issue about services and employment that is not with a lot of benefits and is something that other people have talked a lot about.
The Arkansas Department of Labor.
Hang on just a second. We have an answer. We have someone who wants to respond to. Would you mind hanging up and listening on the radio so we don't get feedback?
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you for calling.
Alrighty.
All right. Go ahead, Cindy.
We actually got this question a lot. I was previously with the Arkansas Department of Workforce Services, and we would get calls about this quite often. And actually, he's correct. The caller's correct. It is a labor issue, which is handled by the Arkansas Department of Labor. And he can call that agency. I don't have the number in front of me, but if you Google that online, you can look that up. They're located over in West Little Rock, and they can help you with the answer to that.
All right. Sir, thank you for calling. And and again, you can give us a call here, 433-0088, area code 501. Anybody else want to respond? Okay. Roger, let's get back to you and your project future.
Okay. As we look to try to remove those barriers, we did several things, and we have a great partner in our area, which is the University of Arkansas Community College at Batesville. Very fortunate to have two institutions of higher learning in our area. We have Lyon College as well, a four-year liberal arts college, and we've been partners with them for a long time. We started something brand new in the state of Arkansas about 11 years ago, which we call Project College Bound, where every high school student of ours graduation requirement is they had to go through the application process at UACCB as part of our graduation requirements. So that helped them get to overcome those barriers. They may be a first-time student who's never enrolled at a community college or anywhere else, and it helps them through that process. So we've had a partnership with them for a long time. So we reached out to them as well, and what can we do to help develop the workforce? What is a education institution, what can we do to help develop the workforce in our area and keep those folks in Independence County, which is what our goal was from the very beginning, develop the workforce and keep our students and kids at home. So we started partnering with them, and we became a conversion charter school 2 years ago, which basically gives us some waivers for seat time where our students don't have to be in seats for 60 minutes every period. They can go do internships, they can take classes out at the community college, they can do all kinds of different things, which exposes them to numerous different things and helps move us along. So we were able to do that, and this year we were excited that we're in year two, and we've had so many successes. Some of the successes this year we've had, we had 18 of our students who graduated with either an associate's degree. We had our first student graduate with 63 college hours, which is what we really want to do. To take care of those students that really want to go to college, let's provide that opportunity for them. If we have a student that really wants a technical certificate of some kind, go straight to work, our goal is to help them have some kind of family-sustaining wage where they can go out and raise a family and be able to stay local. The jobs are there, as Randy said earlier, and I know some of the individuals he's talking about. We had to provide that good quality workforce to be able to keep them there. We had kids that graduated with the certificate in welding, where they can go to right to work and make a very good family-sustaining wage. But we're very excited to be able to do that and to be able to help those individuals in our area. We found out their needs because we went to every business and industry partner in Independence County, sit down with them and ask what we could possibly do to help. They opened up, they welcomed us with open arms. I'm embarrassed that I didn't ask for the first 6 years of my superintendency to go in and talk to them and see what we could do to help. They've opened their arms to us, let us come into their businesses. This is what we need. This is the type of employee we need. So now those institutions are very hard to get into. they're now calling us and asking us, hey, we got an opening. Do you have a young student that has this kind of skill set that we can put to work? It could be anywhere from $15, $18 an hour for a kid right out of high school that has no interest in going to college. So we're very proud of where we are. We're very proud of what we're doing. We saved $125,000 in tuition with our partnership with UACCB for our families this past year. Our students earned over 1,100 hours of college credit, whether it's either in industrial technology or whether it's in general education. So our goal is to help each and every child that's there be able to achieve their future story. And that's kind of how the name came about. And we're excited with the successes at this point. And I'm glad to say that the other school districts in our area are also on board and have partnerships with our community college and with Lyon College as well. And it's going to make a big difference in Independence County.
What has been the response? You go to meetings of school superintendents and work that. What's been the response from other superintendents about this kind of approach?
Well, they want to know how you're able to do that. How do you get business industry to talk to you? How can you make this happen? And you really just have to ask.
Right.
We've just been very pleased. And, we have to show them we have a quality product to invest in. And I believe we've done that. And they're willing to do it. And we're providing a great workforce.
All right. Thank you, Roger. All right, well, next, again, reminding you, this is a live call-in radio show. You can be part of the conversation, 501-433-0088, or you can send an email to speakupar@gmail.com. Well, I know here in Little Rock, WJ, I've been to your center. I saw all the things going on there, and I'd like for you to talk a little bit about your role in working with this.
Right. So I work for the local Workforce Development Board, the Little Rock Workforce Development Board. And so I'd like to explain a little bit about what a local Workforce Development Board is. And there's 10 of them in Arkansas. I happen to be just working for one of them. But... there's a workforce board you may have run into in Independence County and Prairie County that we mentioned before, all over the state. There are 10 workforce boards, and basically we're the local extension of the National Workforce Development System. And it might surprise some people to know that we have a National Workforce Development System, but we do. There's a goals and missions that have been adopted and taken on by our country as a whole, and those kind of trickle down to the local level. And find themselves at the where the rubber meets the road at the local workforce development level, the board level there. So we're fully funded by the Department of Labor, but we're organized here locally as a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We're part of what's kind of commonly known as the one-stop centers, branded in Arkansas as the Arkansas Workforce Centers in whatever particular city or location you might be. And then more recently, they've been called the American Job Centers. At our job center, or a one-stop center, we have 16 partners located within that center. They represent all variety of organizations, state agencies, nonprofit organizations. We have one for-profit organization that works out of the center, and a lot of different agencies that serve people with specific needs or challenges. If some of the listeners are familiar with acronyms, we're the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act funded organization, or what's commonly called the WIOA, and that's a direct descendant of the WIA or JTPA. I think some of your listeners might be familiar with JTPA because it was around for such a long time, the Job Training Partnership Act. So that's what we come, we're the hereditary descendants of those federal programs. And like I said, there's 10 areas and about 60 centers in the state, one-stop centers that operate. Our two basic customer base are job seekers and employers. And so we are kind of the equal sign in between those two people. We try and bring those two together with the help of the state and our community partners. Underneath the category of job seekers, we serve youth, adult, and dislocated workers. And those are sort of distinct funding categories that that are passed along to us at, from the federal level. And then each state is given on an annual basis an allocation that's based upon population and prevailing economic factors at any given time or in any given year. And then Cindy mentioned the Arkansas Workforce Development Agency and services. And that organization at the state level then decides how much each local area is to receive in any given year. We use that money then to pay for eligible and qualified persons to attend vocational training programs, become certified in demand occupations. So we don't try and train people for occupations that don't exist after they finish their training. We try and you know, put them through programs that will produce, as Randy was saying, the kind of jobs that are self-sustaining and supporting families. So we depend on an annual amount, an allocation from the federal government through the state. But our real strength is in our flexibility to be able to reach out and acquire more resources through either grants or partnerships with our community members. And these partnerships especially become true when we're talking about populations with special needs or challenges. That's where I think that we can make a real impact, and we've been successful in recent years in doing that. And I'll talk a little bit more about those specific projects after everyone's had a chance to talk. But I think that the progress that we've done in recent years working with folks with special challenges and special needs has really put us in a position to help and impact the lives of a lot of people for the better.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to hearing more of that. Again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. You can be part of the conversation to offer your experiences or ask questions by calling 501-433-0088 or sending an email to speakupar@gmail.com. Cindy, the Goodwill of Arkansas has certainly been around a while, and I know that you all have done some great things, and I understand there's some new things getting ready to happen, a new Excel Center or something like that. But give us a background about what Goodwill, you know, what their role is.
Sure. Thank you, Paul. I'm real excited to announce, you said we've been around for a while, and we have. We just celebrated our 90th birthday this year, and that we've been in Arkansas. And a lot of people don't understand that the donations that are made to Goodwill centers, what happens with those. And the purpose for those donations is the sale of those donations. And then that money is used to fund what we call mission services and workforce development. And so 90%, 96% of all of our funding comes from the sale of those donated goods. What we use that funding to support in workforce development includes, we have 23 career centers throughout the state. We'll have our 24th, we're opening in July in Blytheville. Those centers have staff that are on site that provide career assessment and planning, resume assistance, job search assistance, interview preparation. Our newest service in those centers is we are providing employment training service to SNAP recipients. These would be individuals who are receiving SNAP that do not have children but need to enter the workforce, and so we are providing those services as well. You mentioned the Excel Center. In Arkansas, there are over 300,000 individuals do not have a high school diploma. And so in looking at that and how we can meet those needs, as WJ said, of those individuals that have challenges to employment, that really is Goodwill's unique aspect in workforce development, in that many of the services and programs that we have focus on individuals that have barriers to employment, and they don't have any means to resolve those barriers. And so with individuals who do not have a high school diploma, we are opening the state's first adult charter school this fall. The tentative date is October the 16th. is our opening day. We will start the school with 125 students. This will be a free high school. We will have free on-site daycare for individuals who have children that need to bring their children with them to school. We will have transportation assistance to help them get to and from their classes. And so we hope that this will help individuals who always had a dream of having a high school diploma and were not able to complete that for whatever reason. We also have a program for individuals who are returning citizens who are leaving incarceration. It's called a Transitional Employment Opportunity Program. And this is a 16-week program that's a really pay-as-you-learn or earn-as-you-learn program. More than 25,000 people in Arkansas are incarcerated, and statistically, more than half of them will return to incarceration if not in, there's not inter, some intercession. And so what we have found is in working with these individuals, it's a 16-week program that's very intensive, that teaches them soft skills, work readiness skills, gives them a workplace skill that they can go and be employed. And we've experienced a less than 10% recidivism rate with the, with our program. We also have programs for individuals with disabilities. There are more than almost 70% of individuals with disabilities in Arkansas are unemployed. And so in trying to address that issue, we do have programs that help individuals with soft skills, coaching, job coaching, helping them to develop work experience that they can connect directly with an employer. We also offer job coaching once they become employed to help them for a period of time make sure that they know how to do that job. And then we also have a program for individuals that are on the autism spectrum and helping them, those young adults, that it's difficult to reach them and get a job skill and get them employed. We have a program called Horizons that helps them as well. And some of our training that we offer through the Academy at Goodwill, we have administrative assistant training, forklift certification, environmental services technician, and then we also do digital literacy training, recognizing that so many Arkansans still are not digitally literate and need that assistance.
All right. Well, that's quite a bit. And, you know, I think my first question ought to be of everybody, well, how busy are you? It sounds like you've certainly got a lot going on. We're going to take a short break here, and then we'll be back with some more discussion about this. Reminding you, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas, and we'll have a little brief break, and you can we invite you to call in at that time. You're listening to KABF.
Ready? One, two, three. Sitting here in my prime. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow. Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know. Maybe I'm supposed to cry. If nobody ever knows the way I feel, that's all right. It's okay, 'cause I'm gonna
make
my world
a better place.
Gonna keep that smile
on my face.
Yeah, I'm gonna teach myself
how to understand.
Gonna make myself a better man. Out the window, climbing up the wall. Is anybody gonna save me? Or are they gonna let me fall? Well, I don't really wanna know. I'm gonna hold on the best I can, and if I fall down, I'm gonna get back up, and it'll be alright. It'll be okay. 'Cause I'm gonna make
my world
a better place.
Gonna
All right, everybody here wants to be a better man and woman, and we're talking about workforce development and making a sustainable job. And we had a caller during the break, and he asked a very good question of Roger Rich. And as you'll recall, he talked about his program at the school called the Project Future, and he wanted to know why in the world it isn't everywhere, and you ought to be in charge of it. And so talk a little bit about that, how many schools are actually taking this kind of approach. I know you talked about being a charter school, but the fact of the matter is a lot of the schools, I think there was a law passed that gave schools a lot more flexibility to do things so that they could be charter schools and still be public schools. So what's keeping your colleagues from across the state doing more of this?
Well, you're exactly right. There are so many different opportunities and ways to go about it now. We're a public school as well still, but we are what's called a conversion charter school, and you have to go through a process for the Department of Education to make that happen. But there are all kinds of different waivers that all school districts can take advantage of, and it's just something that's a little unique and different. There are several schools throughout the state are doing a fantastic job with it all over the state of Arkansas, and we just looked at different models that were being used, and we tweaked it to make it fit us and Independence County.
Has there been any legislation or anything like that to propose more of this, or have people come together to help shape that in the education system of the state?
Let me jump in on that just a minute. Roger's been pretty modest about his results in Southside. The proof of the pudding is the response from the marketplace, from the community. He's got, of 1,800 students total, pre-K through 12 at Southside School, 700 of them choice into that district from surrounding districts.
Uh-huh.
So more than a third of the students in his school system choose to go to that school rather than the school where they live. That's a big signal. That's a huge market response. And as he said, there are lots of schools around the state that are taking steps, major steps in this direction. You don't have to look far at any part of the state to find some innovative, constructive, aggressive activities underway. North Little Rock School has done the very same thing. They're just about to kick off their conversion charter, which is focused on diesel tech and other available jobs within the North Little Rock community. Just go around the state, Springdale, Pea Ridge, Siloam Springs, Blytheville, just all over the state. The K-12 education system is responding to this need. A lot of it is as straightforward as Roger mentioned. Just go talk to the businesses in your community, if you're a superintendent or a principal. What do you need? And then figure out how to provide it for them. They're anxious to tell and share and communicate this. They don't know they can walk into a school building and say, hey, y'all aren't giving me what I need.
Right.
Although that's a big role of some of the chambers of commerce around the state, and that's basically what we've done, is just facilitate conversations, getting the school people, K-12, two-year community colleges, 4 years, get them in the same room with the businesses and let those two groups come together and talk about what they need.
I'm really glad you mentioned part of your approach is quality preschool. And I know that's an important thing in getting kids ready to learn, and particularly for kids who come there with, you know, some challenges. So what about, do you ever incorporate, well, first I wanted to ask how many, what's the ratio of students who look at certificate kinds of approaches as opposed to college bound things? What's probably, is it a 50-50 or what sort of the ratio there?
I'd say pretty close to 50-50. In the past, we've had about 60% of our students that go on to some kind of post-secondary training of some kind. Since we started this program, we had 83% of our students last year further their education in some form or fashion. And it could be for, you know, continuing on with technical certificate and going that route, or it could be, you know, continuing on with their general education requirements. So it's just, it depends on the child. It depends on what they want to do. And our job is to help them to achieve what they set out to do.
I know that workforce development in many schools across the country is incorporated into after-school and summer programs. Do you all do that at your schools?
We do have after-school programs. We have summer programs.
Do they have a workforce component to them, or?
Those at this time do not.
Okay.
You know, it's mostly just trying to make sure we're taking care of delays of kids or kids that are behind and getting them
right.
up
okay.
to speed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, good. All right. Randy, I want to ask you, you know, you were talking about the challenge, you know, the challenges, what's open, why they can't get enough people. What do you think are the barriers? And you mentioned, I guess, people don't want to travel. But what are some of the other barriers you think that are the cause of that?
Not prepared for the work that's available. I mean, face it, you know, we spent about 25 or 30 years assuming that we weren't going to have to make anything or repair anything or operate anything, that somebody else was going to do all that. We were all going to be doctors and lawyers and Indian chiefs. You know, we were going to be consultants and all that.
And philosophers
and poets. And,
well, we need some of those.
Professional baseball players. And,
right.
You know, I mean, we're all going to be, you know, an NBA star. But plan B, you better have a plan B.
Right.
And plan B means being prepared to do the work that's available in the businesses and in the work settings in today's economy. Globally competitive, high technical components in your preparation and your getting ready, STEM skills, math, science, communication skills, soft skills, as Cindy mentioned. It's just absolutely criminal how many kids try to go show up and get a job who are not prepared to sit down and have a conversation with a hiring manager.
Well, you know,
those are skills that can be learned.
Well, this is a bit of an aside, but I read in the paper today, of course, I'm a follower of the Kids Count report, and Arkansas was one of the six worst states in the country for children. And that had to do with the high poverty rate, having the teen pregnancy rate, having to do with, you know, again, the social determinants of being challenged to have experiences. You know, we want people to be held accountable, but if they don't have opportunities to learn, and that's why sometimes after school and summer programs, you know, having been a somewhat disruptive kid in schools in my early years, I ended up being an Eagle Scout. I ended up doing all this stuff because I was doing something. I wasn't sitting there listening to somebody giving me some direction to do. I mean, I used to actually involve figuring out sentence structure and that sort of stuff. It was visual. So I think there are a lot of kids in there in schools that schools miss out on because they learn by doing things. And
it's the teacher's responsibility to figure out how a kid learns and then help that kid learn that way.
Right. But that isn't the model that most education takes. And I think that's a real challenge. And that's quite honestly why after school and summer programs who can teach them to cook so they'll know chemistry or teach them to test the water so they'd find out something. Or in the case of my son, a pole vaulter and a skateboarder learned physics because they could defy energy. And so they were able to apply that sort of thing. But for low-income, rural kids with not a lot of opportunities on all those kinds of things going on, that is, I think, one of the things we have to be concerned about. But that's for another show, I guess.
Well, at some point, we have to decide that we can't continue to afford to throw away kids. We cannot afford to let kids reach the 9th or 10th grade who are functionally illiterate. Okay. If that occurs, somebody ought to be accountable for that. And leaders like Roger and others have recognized this and understand that if a kid passes third grade and is not reading at third grade reading level, he's probably going to be economic roadkill.
Right.
Because from that point forward, it's not about learning to read. It's about reading to learn. And if you can't read, you can't learn.
And the grade level reading has penetrated your brain, Randy. That's
it really
great.
Has.
That's right. Well, that is kind of what I'm talking about. Whose role is it to do that? What's the role of government in doing that, making that happen? How does government help make that happen?
In picking up the pieces?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of different ways. First of all, I would just sort of start off saying that I don't think anybody in government anymore comes to people and says, I'm from the government, I'm here to solve all your problems. So I don't think it's a government-only type of solution.
I
think that we have to come to it in partnership with the community and with business, with our educational institutions and structures that exist there to make the kind of advances and successes that we hear about here in Independence County. So that's one thing I would say is that it's not that. But I think government does serve a key role, a crucial role to play in terms of convening and coordinating those participants and in getting everybody aligned in what I referred to before as the National Workforce Development System. And the goals and the missions and the ideas that we want to pursue about that, here in Little Rock, it's no secret that the Little Rock School District has been in some disarray and some trouble, lack of leadership for some time, to the point now where it's being controlled by the state, and I have to when I apply for these grants prove that in Little Rock we have high dropout rates, we have high poverty rates, we have high pregnancy rates, and all those things are true. And so in this situation, I really actually do pick up those young kids that have been left behind, that have suffered due to lack of support, lack of understanding their ways of learning, lack of a number of different things. The role that government can play in that is by coordinating partners in the community to go after some more funds so that we don't continue to believe that those people are disposable, so that we can come back to them, and it is a matter of coming back to them and picking them back up with some programs that can have some meaning and some impact their lives. And so we've been successful in doing that with a few teen parenting and pregnancy programs that we've been successful in winning. We have a program right now called Youth Build, which is a program to get young individuals back on track in terms of their completing their GED, and then it also teaches them a construction vocational and other vocational training in the afternoons. And then we're actually in partnership right now. We've got an iron in the fire with Goodwill and Our House and some other organizations. For a reentry program, $1.5 million in serving people that have been in the justice system. So, and that's what I mean is that was a community partnership. That was the way that government is coordinating and convening people in the community to address these problems. problems.
And they are providing the funds for it?
We are hopeful that the, that the federal government will be providing the funds for it. Yeah.
Cindy,
Paul, I would just add, to piggyback on what both WJ and Roger have said, it is a coordination. As WJ says, it's all of our responsibilities. I don't think it's government's responsibility to solve the problem, but I think it's all of us collectively. And as Roger said, sometimes you just have to ask. You have to ask the individuals in your community for help. You have to ask business and industry for help. But what we kind of look at it from is trying to have an impact on the parents, which statistically has shown there's a systemic change in the lives of those children. If they see their parents bettering themselves, trying to get a skill, trying to go to school, trying to be gainfully employed or improve the job that they have. Those children see that. They absorb all of that, and systemically that can change their lives in return. One of the things that we've found with Goodwill, you know, more than 71% of kids in the Little Rock School District alone are living below the poverty line. And there's only one book for every 300 kids that are living in poverty. And so one of the things we started was the Books for Kids program, trying to get not books in schools, but books in the homes. And so we have a volunteer program now where individuals can come in and volunteer sorting books, and they can choose the school district of their choice to have those books go to and have those books sent home in those families.
Right. Again, we go back to, I think you pick up the pieces. That's part of what has to be done. Again, this is Speak Up Arkansas. This is a call-in talk radio show. Be part of the conversation, please. We've got about less than 10 minutes left in the show. We'd love to hear from you with any concern or question you have. Cindy, I wanted to ask you one thing. When you were talking about work-related experiences with folks, is some of that being done under the operations of Goodwill, in other words, and programs that they operate?
Yes.
And is the effort there to train them and that they will move on, or?
Yes. Well, both. Train and move on, and in some cases we train and they go to work for a Goodwill store. Uh-huh. But so it's both. But we have what we call the Academy. It's a certified training facility certified by the State Board of Private Career Education here in Arkansas, which now is part of Department of Higher Ed. But we have programs that we're certified to provide. I'll just give you one example. You know, that we're doing these in conjunction with business and industry, and our environmental services technician is in partnership with Baptist Medical Center. And so we are the trainer for them and their environmental services staff. So individuals come to us, they can be trained. We're working daily with Baptist. They come over, they observe the training, they observe the individuals going through the training, and at the end of the 3-week program, they're offered jobs. And so that's one example of how we're doing that and connecting individuals that are looking for work directly with a company.
Okay. Well, we've got about 8 more, or I guess we're down to 7. Anybody else want to, I'm not quite closing comments, but, you know, I think we've talked about job-driven training. We've talked about reducing the skill gap in career pathways. We've talked about community services for hard-to-employ and we've talked about services for those who were part of the criminal justice system. What about the veterans? What is anybody here focused on that in particular? Or
At the Workforce Center, we have two representatives that are dedicated to working with veterans, both disabled veterans and discharged veterans. So, and that's, of course, funded by the Department of Labor also, and usually in coordination with Department of Veterans Affairs. So we have that, and then our work in a number of different organizations that are veteran-centered to try and address the needs of veterans in particular.
Right. All right. Any chance for closing comments? Randy, you've got something you want the listeners to kind of close with what you think they ought to know about?
I would just probably emphasize the opening comment about the fact that there are wonderful job opportunities going begging in Arkansas in just nearly every corner of the state, nearly every community. stronger in some communities than others, no question about that. Some areas are healthier economically than others. Central Arkansas, Northwest Arkansas, Northeast, very strong, vibrant economies. Some smaller towns, some smaller counties, smaller population counties, are a little more challenged.
Right.
But you've got to get skilled. You've got to get yourself trained. You've got to get yourself qualified to do any or some of these exciting and very positive career opportunities that are available all across the state. We've got thousands of open jobs that need to be filled that pay way above family wage earnings levels.
I know you all are very active in the legislature, and I was wondering if there were any bills that were passed that sort of helped promote or advance this kind of workforce?
Absolutely. It was a very positive session in terms of workforce development. Everything from K-12 waivers and more flexibility for guys like Roger operating school systems to better opportunities for kids for scholarships, the governor's Our Future for two-year community college scholarships, the sustained investment in workforce agencies. We hit some long balls in the legislature this year in terms of creating more and better opportunities for people across the state. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what moves the needle.
Right.
Better opportunities, people better prepared for those opportunities so they can earn higher and more attractive wages to have more choices in their lives.
Right, right. What would you tell all the superintendents in the state about what they can do what you've been able to do?
I just encourage them to visit with the leaders in their community, talk to business and industry. Things that are happening are life-changing, life-altering. I could tell you story after story of a young man, 19 years old, no one in his family has ever made over $13 an hour in their life. And he's making right around $20 an hour as a welder, bought his first home and vehicle, and he's changing the rest of his life because of what he's able to do at this point in time. So there's so many of these stories. If you can just go out and talk, I'm going to be a better community member because I know more about my community now. I know that if I have a parent working at the local poultry industry, if they work a full 40 hours, they get a $3 an hour bonus at the end of the week. So our nurses and our teachers, we're not going to call them, come pick them up at 2:30 for a 99-degree fever. You know, we've learned those kind of things. We have a shortage in nurses. We know that. So we're trying to fill a void of about 40 RNs for our hospital. You know, we have 11 young ladies going to have a CNA certification, and you know, when they graduate this school year, when they graduated, we can't fill those 40 nurses by ourselves, but collectively, all of us can. We want to keep folks at home. We want to make family sustaining wages where they can do extremely well, but you got to have those conversations.
Right. Cindy.
I would just say thank you for the opportunity to talk about Goodwill and what we're doing. And if there are any listeners out there that are having challenges to employment, whether it be returning citizens from incarceration or just needing job skills, we're here to help. Our services are free. And you can learn more at goodwillar.org.
All right. Thank you. Real quickly,
I just mentioned the fact that there's 60-plus workforce centers across the state, and we've been trying for a number of years to get away from, you know, sort of that stigma that they're unemployment centers. They're really not. They're so much more than that. They are employment centers, first and foremost. We're trying to find people employment. All the services that are offered there are free of charge to both our employers and the customers. It's already been paid for. You've already paid for it. Your Uncle Sam has paid for it. We just want to make everybody in the community aware that we offer our facility free of charge. So if you want to have a job fair, if you want to have a meeting, if you need to have, you know, any kind of a public meeting, we're there for you. And all we ask is that, you know, your mission is just aligned with ours, and that's to enable people to work at self-sustainable jobs and financially support themselves.
All right.
Thanks.
Well, I want to thank Randy Zook, Roger Rich, W.J. Monagle, and Cindy Varner for being with us on the show today. And thank you, listeners. Speak Up Arkansas next week. The topic of conversation is men and boys of color. So stay tuned for that. I'm going to be on the beach, but a capable Ryan Davis will be the monitor here, moderator. And thank you for calling in, those who did. And thank all of you all for listening to KABF's Speak Up Arkansas.
Hi, this is Alanis Morissette, and you're listening to KABF 88.3 in Little Rock, the voice of the people.
It's time for Radio Cows, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we will share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul, interviews with some of your favorite musical artists on Arkansas Sounds, content from the Butler Center's collections, information about what's happening in the library system, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radiocals@cals.org. This program is presented by the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies and the CALS Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information about Radio CALS, including links to resources mentioned in our segments, please visit